Today's episode of Behind the Numbers is brought to you by Haefely Flanagan. Haefely Flanagan is a full-service accounting firm that's been serving our clients since 1967. We are not your typical accounting firm. Our services extend well beyond tax and audit to include valuation services, strategic and succession planning, leadership development, and more. When you work with Haefely Flanagan, we help you realize your long-term goals. Learn more at hfco.com or call 856-722-5300.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Behind the Numbers. My name is Dave Bookbinder, and this is the show where we dig deeper to understand what really matters most in business. Today, we're going to be talking about creating a saleable business, and I am pleased to welcome Jim Haefely, who is a partner and a visionary at Haefely Flanagan. Jim, welcome to Behind the Numbers.
Dave, thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me here, and I'm hoping to use Behind the Numbers to launch my television career. It's going to be Behind the Numbers, Squawk Box, Mad Money, and then Jimmy Fallon.
Nice. I'm right there with you on late night, and many guests on this program have done exactly what you did. So you're in good hands here. So
Dave, you know how I know you're not telling the truth?
How's that?
Because I think you go to bed before late night TV comes on.
I can't believe
it. I know enough about you to know that.
We're actually recording this, aren't we, folks? Okay. Somebody's going to regret this. It may be me. Let's get serious for just a second. Tell the audience a little bit about who you are and who you serve at Haefely Flanagan.
I am Jim Haefely. I am a partner, like you said, and the visionary at Haefely Flanagan. And we are a certified public accounting and consulting firm who serve mostly the lower and middle market and entrepreneurs. And I like to say we are we're not your traditional CPA firm, and we're not your grandma or grandpa's CPA firm. We are what I call ourselves problem solvers. We really want to be the first point of contact for our clients, no matter what the problem is, whether it's big or small. And a lot of times we may or may not have the solution, but we are certainly going to help our clients find the solution to whatever issue they may be having.
Yeah.
So we really are, I'd say our clients' partners in a lot of respects. I mean, we got to be careful with independence rules for compliance reasons, but other than that, we really try to look to be an extension of our clients.
Yeah, and that's a great philosophy. And you're here today to talk about creating a saleable business. So there's a lot of things that you do to help your clients. But one of the biggest challenges and opportunities that your clients face is the sale of their business.
Yep.
So let's talk about that. When do clients first approach you about the notion of selling their companies?
So it's changed a lot since once I first started my career. I probably spend it, I'd say at least half my time now, dealing with mergers and acquisitions. And we've built out a niche sell side practice. You know, if I thought about it more, we probably would have tried to do more of a buy side because you have a recurring business model there. But we started really just with helping some of our clients that called us to say, hey, we're getting approached to sell our business. And in the beginning, really, it was more of a learning process for us to really help them best go through a sale. Now it's really evolved more into of us reaching out to our current clients and getting referred in to having people prepare way ahead of time. So it starts with a phone call, really, and a fact-finding mission of where people are in the life cycle of their business.
Yeah, you talk about preparing ahead of time. I was just at an event the other day. We were talking about exit readiness. The panel was talking about when companies should be preparing. What are you telling your clients about when they should start to think about selling their companies?
I'd say day one from when they create the company. I know that's not realistic, but if at some point you're going to have a transition of your business, whether it's going to be to another family member, to your employees, or to an outside company or to a public company. And in my opinion, if you go in with that mindset from day one, you're going to be best positioned to sell your company. But it should be at a minimum of 3 years prior to any transaction, at an absolute minimum. But I'm serious when I say the longer time horizon you have to prepare, the more prepared you're going to be.
Yeah, one of the panelists said something that really resonated with the entire audience who was in attendance. And he said that you may not be for sale, but you can always be bought. So the idea is be sale ready. So when you're advising your clients to think about this a couple of years ahead of time, what's behind that, Jim?
So I'm going to answer that, but whoever said that, it was right on point, because I'd say even 20 years ago, the lower middle market, there wasn't an easy path for a sale. Private equity firms, and there's thousands of private equity firms now, have created just an enormous opportunity for small and mid-sized businesses to exit. And our clients get called weekly about selling. So even the ones that aren't for sale are potentially going to sell in the near term. And a life cycle of a client isn't what it used to be, and a life cycle of a business isn't what it used to be, because there's a market now for people to exit. So what do we tell them when they call? That was the question, right?
Yeah. What's behind the runway of 3 years to be prepared minimum?
So it starts with looking at the company's balance sheet and income statement and making sure there's not a lot of noise in their financials. And a lot of people that you are either aware or unaware of what's going on in financials really think about people running their lifestyle through their business. And, you know, there's still some of that, but realistically, our client base is on the larger side. And, you know, we don't have a lot of people trying to run their lifestyle through or take a bunch of tax deductions. That really doesn't happen as much as it used to, just because of where we're at in the world now. So it's really more about making sure things are classified properly, making sure people are maximizing their gross profit percentage, making sure people have the right amount of inventory if they happen to have inventory, making sure they're keeping track of the receivables, that their receivables are current, that they're properly looking at if there are potential bad debts, if there's any contingent liabilities that they may need to address. So getting the noise out of the financial statements is really where it starts.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that you're seeing that clients really aren't running their so-called lifestyle through the business. In my world, in valuation consulting and working with entrepreneurs and privately held companies, I'm still seeing a decent amount of that. And I've always advised clients, when they're thinking about a sale, just remember that it's a process. Yes, there's an event at the end, it's the transaction, but you need to be sale ready. And that's what we're talking about here, becoming a saleable business. So talk a little bit about why it's so important to have good financials, as opposed to getting to a diligence phase and then starting to talk about the noise and the normalizing adjustments that have to happen to get a true picture.
Yep. Well, you know, as in doing valuations, one of the things you have is add backs and normalization adjustments. And they're basically non-recurring items that are in your income statement, or items that aren't pertinent to the operation of the business that you want to carve out to make your profitability higher. And the multiple that's discussed all the time is EBITDA now. Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And that's really your cash flow, what everybody looks at. So you want that number to be as high as possible to be able to get the largest purchase price possible. So you want to list out anything you can think of that wouldn't be pertinent to the operations or that would be non-recurring. And if you have your lifestyle going through there, you're going to be listing a lot of items on there and trying to justify them, which can get down to, you know, it ends up becoming a negotiation with the buyer. And then you have issues with representations and warranties in an agreement that could end up killing a deal if you have too much going through there, especially if you end up doing a stock deal, somebody's buying your actual stock of your company, not the assets of your company.
Yeah, interesting point. I was just working with a client the other day and making normalizing adjustments because they acknowledge that they've got family members that are on the payroll but not really active in the business. So let's normalize that EBITDA.
Yep, that is still common. So when I say people aren't necessarily running their lifestyle through the business, there are certainly people that have family members on the books getting payroll that probably aren't contributing to the overall value of the company, that are not necessarily going to be kept or replaced after a transaction. So therefore, that would be a normalizing adjustment that would increase someone's cash flow, that would help them get a higher purchase price.
Yeah. Jim, when people approach you about helping to sell their company, obviously there's a monetary component there, but is there something that's bigger when you think about, you know, is it legacy? Is it succession to the next generation? What's the motivation?
That's a great question, because my answer earlier probably was out of sequence, because one of the first things I ask somebody when they get referred in is, why are you calling us? Why do you want to sell? And a lot of times people's answers aren't great, and it ends up leading into an engagement where we help them get prepared and get them mentally ready for sale. Because most of the time, I think people are so busy running their own business, they're not necessarily thinking about selling or transitioning their business. So when that conversation comes up, it goes down a lot of different paths. You know, some people want the most net proceeds, the most money after the sale. Some people want to create a legacy. Some people want to reward their loyal employees. So it's, and I think the initial conversation, a lot of people say, well, I want the most money. But most of the surveys that you look at, I think it ends up being 75% or 80% of the time when business owners think about it, that's not the number one answer. It's not the net proceeds or the most money they could get. It ends up being something else like creating a legacy.
Yeah. And I always tell clients when they're asking me about the sale of their company and talking about maximizing valuation, that it's not about getting the last nickel, but if you get a fair and reasonable valuation and you've got a good wealth manager, for example, you can manage your financial future and live quite well and then move on to do other things. Yep. Jim, for folks who are watching and listening and want to learn more about you or how they can work with you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Best way to get in touch with me is either go to our website, which would be www.hfco.com. And on there, everything's on there. I think even including my cell phone. So you look up people and look up James Hafley and either give me a call on my cell phone or drop me an email. And I'd be happy to touch base with anybody, especially if they're calling about potentially selling their business.
Right. And you can also catch him on late night television.
Jim, eventually. Not yet. I got to build up. I got to get more in a routine of being on TV shows.
All right. You sit there and marinate in that for just a minute here. Don't go anywhere. You folks watching and listening at home, don't go anywhere either. We'll be right back on Behind the Numbers after we pay a quick commercial break here.
It takes something special to dive into the unknown. To face the unpredictable and unlock the mysteries that await beyond. Something tough, reliable, to fuel your confidence where elements seem to conspire to blur your senses. An unwavering ally, relentlessly field-tested by the pioneers who ventured there before. It was constantly perfected over time. For those who push their limits always further and shine an ever new light on our world. The Submariner.
Today's episode of Behind the Numbers is brought to you by Hafley Flanagan. Hafley Flanagan is a full-service accounting firm that's been serving our clients since 1967. We are not your typical accounting firm. Our services extend well beyond tax and audit to include valuation services, strategic and succession planning, leadership development, and more. When you work with Hafley Flanagan, we help you realize your long-term goals. Learn more at hfco.com or call 856-722-5300.
And welcome back to Behind the Numbers. I'm Dave Bookbinder, and today we are talking about creating a saleable business with Jim Hafley, who is a partner and visionary at Hafley Flanagan. Jim, a lot of good stuff that we covered there in the first segment. Just want to continue right on with that same momentum and talk about the importance of the team when you're representing a company for sale. A lot of times when you have a key person, there's, you know, discounts for the fact that you're relying on one key individual. So speak to both topics, if you don't mind. What happens when you have that one key individual, and why is it so important to have more than just a key individual?
Yep. I'll take the second part of that first. So when you're talking about a key individual, I think you're talking about at the actual company that's selling.
Yeah.
Correct? Okay. Yeah. So that's one of the things that comes out through our fact-finding stage that, you know, is this really a saleable business or is this someone that a company might want to acquire? Because one of the things we preach is you want to build out a saleable business. And if you can, not all the time you can, you want to have a recurring revenue model because they're the ones that are most valuable, like SaaS software companies are the most valuable and you're not relying on one person there. So you really don't want to have a single person concentration because it'll reduce the value of your business. You'll discount your value. You won't get a premium. Just like if you had one large customer, you could have a discount because you have a customer concentration. So you really want to build out a management team, you know, a team of people that it becomes an organization that you can sell. And if it's a service line, the service line is really your product and you don't want to be relying on either one or even two or three people. You want to have a whole team of people and same thing with the customer. You don't want to have all your sales to one customer because, you know, is anybody really going to buy that? Maybe, but you're certainly going to get a discount.
Yeah, because anything that's associated with risk is going to impact valuation. So I always tell clients, anything you're able to do to de-risk your business, like diversified customer base, to your point.
Yep, diversified management, diversified customer base, absolutely decrease risk and increase value.
Yes. Let's tell the audience a little bit about the timing. A lot of
I didn't get a chance to answer the second part of it, which I think is super important. So not to cut you off. So building out a team, you know, that could depend upon a bunch of different things, and a lot of it depends upon what type of company it is, what type of industry it's in. But one of the most important things is making sure you have an attorney that is skilled, experienced, and knowledgeable in mergers and acquisitions. You know, I've had the uncomfortable situation where we've been referred into a client by an attorney who was not mergers and acquisition attorney. And we were going to the diligence phase and ultimately in the document phase. And I had to tell the client that, you know, I really think you need to replace the attorneys here. And I like the attorneys. I still refer this law firm, but they just did not have anybody skilled in an acquisition of this size. And, you know, once you get to a certain point, the attorneys become more important than the business advisors because they have to make sure that the documents are done properly to protect the sellers. And if you have a bad attorney, they could blow the entire deal up when it's a good deal. So you need to really make sure you have a law firm that has the depth and the knowledge to be able to help you. And then, you know, the aftermath of that is you had already mentioned it. You really need a good financial advisor to make sure that you're even meeting with them before you're considering a sale, because how do you know how much money you need to live the rest of your life until you actually plan for it? So you need to sit down with somebody and say, okay, these are the things I want in my life. How can I accomplish that? And a lot of times with entrepreneurs, one of those ways is ultimately they capitalize on the sale of the asset, the business that they built up and sold that allows them to live whatever lifestyle they may want or whatever legacy they may want to create.
Yeah. It's funny. I was chuckling when you're talking about the attorney situation because I've written an article. It's called Thinking of Selling Your Company. Here's Five Things You Need. And it's all about putting a good team of advisors around you, the importance of that. And I specifically call out, you know, don't use your brother-in-law, the personal injury attorney to paper your transaction. So great points on that. I want to dovetail the whole team concept into the due diligence process because you know, I'm a former investment banker, so I've been through this drill. And a lot of times when sellers are going into the diligence process, despite preparation, it can be a little overwhelming for them. Can you talk a little bit about your experience in the diligence with your sellers?
Overwhelming is probably a little bit of an understatement. You have most of the time who we're dealing with are people that are founders or first or second generation. So their asset, their business is a family member. It is. So it becomes the due diligence process itself kind of takes on a life of its own. But throughout that process, it's an emotional stage for these people that are just so attached to their business. It's like selling one of their pets or selling one of their children. So not only do they have to worry about getting all the information and giving it to the buyer, and then having it scrutinized, they have to deal with the fact that this isn't going to be their baby anymore. So you almost end up being, especially the role that I play, you end up being part psychologist and working with them through this. And every deal dies at some point, and some of them die multiple times. And I make sure I have multiple conversations with the business owners before the process starts, telling them, don't get over emotional about anything. Take it in stride. Things are going to happen where you're going to say, oh my God, this is over with, or I can't stand this buyer. I may not be able to work with them even to get this deal done. And I just encourage them, do not get overly emotional about it. And it's easy for me to say because it's not my business.
Right.
But if I tell them that 12 times, you know, they tend to be less emotional about it. It's not that they're not going to, it doesn't take all the emotion out of it, but it certainly, I think, helps them become even more even keel and have the process be a little bit smoother. But there's always things going to come up. I mean, I'll give you an example where we had a guy who was third generation who got introduced to me. I actually tried to talk him out of being sold a couple times because I think he could scale his business because he was relying on himself. So tying it all in, which wasn't planned, but he was really a one-man show. He was selling, he was doing customer service, and he wanted to go through with it because he was exhausted. And it probably was about a four-month process, and we couldn't get a hold of him on the Friday before he was supposed to close on a Monday. And no idea what's going on, no idea what's going on. He called myself, and he asked me to conference in the attorney. I conferenced in the attorney. He told us on Monday morning he got physically ill. Mm. And could not go through with the transaction because he wasn't mentally prepared for it because his grandfather was still alive and his grandfather liked to come in the office and he didn't know whether they were going to let his grandfather come into the office anymore. So talking about just being emotionally ready,
yeah,
you have to be emotionally ready and then go through with the due diligence process after already financially ready.
Yeah. So it's interesting. The emotional component is something that comes up in every conversation. It came up at this event that I attended, like I said, just earlier this week. So you mentioned how that can be a deal killer. I also imagine the emotional attachment can be something that prevents a business owner from selling. What other reasons are you seeing that would prevent a business owner from embarking on this journey?
I think a couple of things. I think one, setting realistic expectations helps the process. When I first got into helping people sell their business, most people thought their business was worth more than it actually was because there wasn't the market that there is now. There's just a lot more potential buyers now. Now it's actually a little different. Most people think their company's probably worth less than it is, although it could be shifting now with what's going on with interest rates in the world. So, you know, I just think going in and having a conversation with people and trying to find out why are they doing it, and how much money do they need? You know, are they going to have enough money to live the rest of their life? That eliminates some of the obstacles. There's some things you can't eliminate. You know, you could be having a client that the real estate's integral to the operations. And in New Jersey, especially, there could be an environmental issue that could end up killing a deal because you can't get clean title to the property. There could be issues where there's employment issues that weren't known about, because, you know, they didn't have right documentation on people. I mean, there are so many things that can kill a deal. That's why getting ready and being prepared and having someone like myself or a good merger and acquisition attorney asking these questions ahead of time,
yeah,
allow people to address these issues before they're found during due diligence. Because most problems can be solved if you're prepared. If they come up during the due diligence phase, you could spook a potential buyer that can end up killing a deal.
Yeah. Jim, for folks who are watching and listening and want to learn more about you or how they can work with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Best way is to go to our website at www.hfco.com. Look on people, find my name, and I believe even my cell phone number is on there and certainly my email address, and drop me a line.
Great. Thank you. You're talking about the environmental matter. It reminds me of earlier in my investment banking career, literally early on, you know, literally counting the bonus dollars for a deal that's about to close, working a cordage and twine manufacturer that had been in business for 100 years, finally found a great buyer. As we're going into environmental due diligence, learned that they've been dumping toxic chemicals into the river behind them, whole deal cratered. So anything can happen. What other surprises have you seen, or what other surprises can you tell the audience to be mindful of as they're going down this path?
Again, I think a lot of the surprises can be avoided by being prepared.
Yeah.
Even with that being said, typically something comes up. I mean, it's, you know, you're going through tax diligence and something that you think could be minor, you know, there's something called nexus in tax law, which is a nightmare now because everybody's heard of Wayfair. There's a tax court case that was brought about by against Wayfair about where you have to report and pay taxes, sales tax, income taxes. So now a lot of companies have Nexus everywhere, meaning that if you have a dollar of a sale in a state, you may have to file and pay taxes in that state. And if you have a larger buyer, a lot of times you're gonna have the other diligence company coming in and saying, hey, they didn't file taxes in three states. And in reality, it's probably immaterial to the transaction, but there's going to be things that come up that you have to deal with. And these are the things that if you know ahead of time, you can say, hey, there's potential issues where somebody didn't file an XYZ state. And you know what that means? That means $100 in unreported income taxes that you can provide a representation or a warranty against that if anything were to come up. Because again, there are going to be things. If I went in and looked at any company, even a public company, I think I could find something to pick apart just because there's so much going on that you can always find something. There's always going to be a surprise. You know, it's the unknown that happens while you're in the diligence phase that can really blow the transaction. It would be something material. Something immaterial like that is typically not gonna end up blowing up a deal.
Yeah, that's a tweetable moment that you just said there. It's the unknown that can blow it up.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Talk to me a little bit about the family dynamics. When you're working with a privately held company and you've got various family members, presumably they all need to be in somewhat alignment when they're going to market, but that doesn't always happen.
So one of the things we do at our firm is we focus on alignment, and it doesn't just have to be family members. It's making sure management teams are aligned. It's easier when they're not family members, which may or may not come as a surprise. If you have a management team that are unrelated, a lot of times it's not necessarily easier to get them to align, but if they're not aligned, it's easier to make changes. If you have family members that aren't aligned and cannot get aligned, you know, that's where you can get into some issues of, you know, is there a possibility to make a change? Is there a possibility for one person leaving the business? So it's much more difficult when it's family members, because, you know, if you're new to the client, there are things that happen at grandma's house 25 years ago that you have no idea why there could be tension. Right. You know, if they've been our clients for 20 years, we may know some of that history, and that's why we're part psychiatrists sometimes. But you know, the family dynamic certainly, I would say, makes it a little bit more challenging to make sure that they're aligned. If they're aligned, it's easy, you know. Yeah. And sometimes you have family members that really are aligned. They say, hey, we don't want to sell right now. We want to get prepared. We want to get as big as possible. We want to create a legacy, or we want to sell to our loyal employees, you know. And I'd say that's more often than not nowadays, because you can do transactions where you can make enough money where you don't have to sell to the big, gigantic company. You know, there's ways to actually get enough money and keep it a local business. There's ways to do that now. Yeah. But that dynamic is interesting, because there are so many times where you don't know what's going on. You don't know why there's tension in the room, and you have to ask questions, and they're uncomfortable, and you got to find out why there's tension in the room. And, you know, sometimes you gotta get out what the real issue is. And sometimes it's not business related. It's again, something that happened at some family member's house years ago.
Yeah, I hear that quite a bit. You've got to get through that as a family so that for the next holiday dinner, everybody's still talking to each other.
Yep, exactly.
Jim, I could talk to you for another half hour, but unfortunately, they gave me the sign that we're done, so I can't. So I want to thank you.
I'll have to come back then.
I should definitely come back. And I want to thank you for joining us on Behind the Numbers today. Look for Jim Haefeli on the Tonight Show.
Eventually. After I'm here and getting more in a routine and getting more comfortable with it.
There you go. He'll be in this chair next week, folks. We've been talking about creating a saleable business today, and my guest is Jim Haefeli, partner and visionary at Haefeli Flanagan. And that name may sound familiar because Haefeli Flanagan is a sponsor of today's episode. So I want to thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of Behind the Numbers. My name is Dave Bookbinder, and I'm the one that my clients turn to when they want to know what their most important assets are worth. So if you're a business owner and you've enjoyed this conversation and don't know what your business is worth, we should have a conversation. You can find me on LinkedIn. Thank you out there for watching and listening. Can't do it without you. Crush that subscribe button. Stay in touch with all that we're up to. And we'll see you next time on Behind the Numbers.